You're listening to The State We're In. I'm Jonathan Gruber. Last month, we asked the question, do we have a right to a pet? Philosopher Gary Francione was on that show, and his answer was unequivocal.
We cannot justify domestication. We simply can't do it. Whether we're domesticating those animals to be eaten or whether we're domesticating those animals to serve us as pets, we can't justify it.
Gary's point of view inspired a lot of listeners to respond. And it also inspired a fair amount of debate among ourselves on the show. Do animals, in fact, have rights? What does it mean for animals to have rights? So we asked Gary to come back on the show, and we matched him with another philosopher, Jan Narveson. We begin with Jan explaining why he doesn't believe that we have any moral obligation to animals.
What morality is a sort of uniform set of rules to be imposed by everybody on everybody. These amount to something like a social contract in the sense that we've got all these people that we're relating to. Animals, on the other hand, are not part of this because they can't communicate with us. They're not moral agents in the sense in which we are. And the question is, what is there about animals which makes us, who are moral agents, compelled to recognize rights on their part? And the trouble is that the answer to this seems to be virtually nothing.
Jan, I don't completely understand. Are you saying that humans have morality and animals don't, and that's it in a nutshell?
In a sense. I mean, the nutshell is this. We're talking about moral agency, not morality.
But Jan, don't we recognize, though, that humans that don't have moral agency are still members of the moral community? And so it's not clear to me, and I think that that's a generally accepted view.
Yeah, this is what I call the argument from marginal cases. Now, hardly anybody is like that. Children, of course, are. Children don't have full rights. They grow up and they become people with full rights, and they're very important to us, obviously, for that kind of reason.
Jan, let me ask you a question. Do you accept that it's morally wrong to inflict unnecessary suffering or death on sentient non-humans? Do you think that there's just no moral, that there's no moral prohibition on that activity?
That's right.
Okay.
That is to say, I mean, I'm a nice guy myself, and, you know, most of us are rather sympathetic, and that sort of behavior is recognized as being not very nice, but the claim that we're doing something seriously morally wrong under that category, I think, is not the case.
So could I just interrupt and let me bring it to you, Jan. If you believe that animals belong in a separate moral category from humans, let's put it that way, what is to stop us then from being very cruel to them?
Well, what's the point is in the first place? And in the second place, I agree with the general psychological perception that a habit of being cruel to animals could very well lead to a similar habit in regard to humans, and that's serious.
Well, but there are a lot of...
By the way, there's another general point to make here, and that is we're talking indiscriminately about animals, but in fact, all the animals that you and I ever relate to virtually, unless we're hunters, are actually tame animals. They're somebody's property. And we do not have the right to inflict damage on other people's property, pets, nor domestic farm animals, etc. They all belong to somebody. They're not ours. We can't do whatever we want to with them.
But
Gary, you don't believe...
Because they have intrinsic rights. It's only because their owners do.
Gary, you don't believe that animals are property.
Of course they're property. I mean, as an empirical matter, they're property. I don't believe they ought to be. And when I use the expression animal rights, I mean one right, the right not to be treated as property. But once we recognize that animals have the right not to be treated as property, once we recognize that their interest in not being treated as commodities and in having their interests valued at zero, depending on what our whim is or our desire is, we have to abolish our institutionalized exploitation of animals.
Notice that Gary doesn't count the sentiment in favor of animals as a whim. I can easily imagine many people in many cultures regarding it as precisely that. Who are these crazy people who like animals?
Well, Jan, look, I think you are misunderstanding my position if you think that I think we should use the law to impose on people this view. I think that would be crazy.
Okay.
It would never work. I think we need to think differently about the way we deal with animals. And I believe the revolution has to be one of the heart, and it has to be an ethical revolution. But, you know, if I'm torturing an animal, if I like torturing animals, but I'm otherwise a nice guy, I mean, you know, your argument is my why torturing animals is only a problem if it's going to lead me to be a nasty person otherwise. But as long as I'm not a nasty person otherwise, and there are plenty of people in this world who do all sorts of horrible things to animals, but yet most people don't regard them as horrible people. So on your view, there's simply no, you know, the moral obligation is non-existent. There is nothing wrong as long as people are nice people otherwise to other humans. If they torture animals and they get a charge out of doing that, if they like dog fighting, they like cock fighting, they like all sorts of things like that, then that's fine. That's fine for them to do. That's your position, is it not?
Well, when you say fine, you're talking in a different kind of language.
Is it morally acceptable? Is it morally acceptable for people to engage in dog fighting?
Well, in my view, there are sort of two major general parts of morality. One part is the strict part having to do with rights, which is what I took you to be talking about originally, though I'm not so sure anymore. And the other part has to do with how we ought to live and what kind of people you ought to be and so forth. And on that front, I think torturing animals is pointless and weird. But the claim that it is morally wrong in anything like the first sense is, I think, not true. But anyway,
what do you mean? It's such a marginal topic.
It's such a marginal. I mean, why are we even talking about that? Because overwhelmingly, the main use of animals, from our point of view, is first for food, and secondly for medical research.
Well, I would suggest, though, Jan, that our use of animals for the production of food involves torture.
Oh, I know
well,
you do.
But I mean,
I want to claim that the torture is justified. You want to claim it's not.
Well,
I,
let me ask you this, Jan. Let me ask you this.
I think there's a very strong.
Well, that's my question, the flip side of the question about dog fighting is,
yes,
we have no justification for eating non-human animals. It's not necessary for us to eat them for health purposes. Animal-based agriculture is an environmental disaster. So the question becomes, how do we justify killing 53 billion animals worldwide for food every year, not counting aquatic animals? How do we justify that if we take at all seriously the notion that we ought not to inflict unnecessary pain, suffering, and death on animals? I mean, what possible justification could we have, and how is that any different from dog fighting? I mean, some people like to sit around and watch dogs fight, and some people like to sit around a barbecue pit roasting animals that have been tortured every bit as much as the dogs used in dog fighting.
Jan?
What you are, see, you're arguing from a marginal weird case, the guy who tortures animals for its own sake, to the conclusion that people who eat hamburgers like me are malevolent torturers, and that, you know, I just don't accept this. Gary runs together two very different issues about this unnecessary business. We don't need to justify treating animals by claiming that they're in some serious sense necessary, like we would die if we didn't eat animals or something like that. That's not necessary at all. The fact is that if you like meat, then you're justified in eating meat in killing animals for the sake of doing so.
I think that there's a lot of confusion. I think that a lot of people believe, and I know, I mean, I spent a lot of time going around and lecturing to various groups and talking to various groups, and it's clear to me that even though it's 2009, a lot of people really believe that they need to eat animal products to lead an optimally healthy life. That is empirically not true. But a lot of people still believe it, and I think that has a role to play in it. But I also think we live in a society in which the casual infliction of death on animals is so widely accepted as sort of a default position. In a sense, it hasn't really sort of hit the radar screen yet of a lot of people. But there is clearly a change occurring. It's happening here in North America. It's happening in Europe. The thinking about this issue is clearly in transition.
Gary, what would it take for Jan to convince you that you are wrong?
You're an interesting host, Jonathan. You always ask good questions. I don't think he could. I mean, Jan's theory, I'm familiar with Jan's general political philosophy and his libertarianism and in his notion of contractualism as a view, as a basis for morality. I reject that. I do not believe that that's a good argument. I think that this notion that, you know, that human beings make contract or there's anything like a social contract, I think that that's completely fiction. I think these are devices which philosophers use and don't have any, I mean, there's no social contract. I didn't make make a contract. You didn't make a contract. There ain't no social contract.
Gary obviously has
or any of the
responsible proponents of contractarianism.
But the notion that the members of the moral community are those who are capable of making contracts or who are moral agents is just a notion that it's a fundamental premise I don't accept and I don't think can be justified and I don't think is reflected in the conventional moral thinking of most people. So I don't think he could convince me. What I find curious about his some of the comments he's made is when he says, well, and Jan, correct me please if I'm misstating this, but you said that you think that torturing animals is morally permissible, but you think it's weird. So if I leave my house today and I'm on my way to the university and I encounter somebody who is about to blowtorch a dog because he enjoys torturing dogs, I can say to him, what? This is weird what you're doing. It's morally permissible. It's quite all right for you to do it, but it's morally, there is no ought there. There is no a coherent ought statement. I can't really tell you that you ought not to do it. All I can tell you is it's weird. Jan, I don't understand what that means.
You can tell anybody that he ought or ought not to do anything.
I understand, but
the question is, what kind of fundamental reason do we have for doing this? Now, in the case of torturing animals, other people look by and they're shocked. They don't like to see this kind of thing being done.
Well, Jan. But hold on. Wait, Jan. Is it unpleasant to you? Jan, if you walked down the street and you saw a man putting a blowtorch to a dog, what would you do?
I would ask him what on earth he was doing.
Would you stop
him? What's the point? Probably not.
Would you call the police?
Why would you call the police, Jan? On what grounds would you call the police? Because weird behavior is not against the law. I mean, you know.
It's probably somebody's dog.
No. What if it's a stray dog? What if it's a stray dog, Jan?
If it's a stray dog, you know. I mean, I probably wouldn't stop him. You know, this is what really impresses me about this is how you take these very, very outre cases as being typical. Notice that bringing up animals for food is nothing like this. I mean, Gary's claim that they're being tortured is a
Jan, can I ask you a question? May I ask you a question?
I was brought up on a farm. We had cows when I was a kid, and I can assure you that they were not, in any normal sense of the word, tortured in any way, shape, or form.
Were they castrated without anesthesia? Were they dehorned?
The ones we had were not. We had one of them was dehorned.
And how were they, and Jan,
the claim that dehorning a cow is torturing it.
Jan, I tell you, I'm astonished at this because I have been, I don't know how many slaughterhouses you've been in. I've been in lots of them. I've been on lots of cattle farms, sheep farms, pig farms. I've been in egg batteries, and I have been in, you know, cow slaughterhouses, pig slaughterhouses, chicken slaughterhouses. And I don't know what your definition of torture is, Jan, but I can tell you that, I wouldn't want to spend any time in any of those circumstances.
You wouldn't? No, but did the animals, like, were they writhing in pain?
Jan, yeah, in many...
Generally speaking, they execute animals.
Well, no, that's actually not true, Jan. For example, we have laws, or at least laws in many countries, which require that large farm animals be stunned before they're shackled, hoisted, and cut. I have been in plenty of slaughterhouses. In order to, for example, stun a pig for an adequate amount of time, you've got to keep those electrodes on the pig's head for a certain amount of time, and most of the time they don't do it. They just give them a quick shock, they fall over, the chain goes around the back leg, they get hoisted up. Many of them, I have been in slaughterhouses where I would say that 30-40% of those animals are conscious when they're being cut into, and that's a conservative estimate. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what your familiarity is with a food production, but I can tell you that the things that I have seen give me nightmares.
Well, you know, there we are. You see, they don't give me nightmares, and I'm sure they don't give the people who work in the slaughterhouses nightmares.
Jan, slaughterhouses
is,
have.
Is this not, in some fairly serious sense, a matter of taste?
Jan, what would it take for Gary to convince you that he's right?
Well, he has several different arguments, but the most fundamental one, as far as I can see, is the claim that some sentient being suffers as a result of something that we do is a sufficient reason why we shouldn't do it.
Actually,
or at least it's a very strong reason why we shouldn't do it. One that would not be counterbalanced by the fact that it was otherwise very much in our interests to do it. I mean, the standard example is eating animals Well, the question is our interest in the taste of animal flesh, especially, such as to justify doing the things we do to them to get them into the frying pan? My answer is yes. Now, why is it yes? Because I don't think that animals count in the sense in which humans do. I mean, animals are perfectly reasonable and perfectly justified to, quote, enslave, unquote, and in Gary's sense, quote, torture, unquote, animals for these purposes.
Okay, I have one last question for the both of you, and it is this. Gary, could you ever see yourself becoming a meat eater? Jan, could you ever see yourself becoming a vegetarian? Let's start with you, Gary.
No, I really can't. I've been doing this now, Jonathan, for almost 30 years, and I'm very familiar with how humans treat animals, and it's horrifying. And I would never eat them. What is troubling to me is the notion that our taste, that you know, the pleasure that we get from eating something, someone, from inflicting pain, suffering, and death, whether it's direct pleasure or indirect pleasure. I mean, the bottom line is they're all, I mean, this is what morality is about, isn't it, Jonathan? I mean, there are things that we wish to do. There are things that may make us happy that are wrong.
Jan, could you ever become a vegan?
Sure. Why not? All I have to do is be persuaded that I'm wrong about the subject of animal rights. I might mention that I'm one of the very few philosophers that I know who has changed his mind in a major way about some fundamental point of moral philosophy. Who knows? Maybe it could happen again.
Gary Francione teaches law and philosophy at Rutgers University in the U.S., and Jan Narveson is a professor of philosophy at the University of Waterloo in Canada.